listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Today is a Rachel's Trivia Challenge. I'm excited. I hear this is a huge topic.
It is a huge topic. I should have realized this when I proposed it and we put it on the calendar, but I did not. And as a result, I've been having trouble all week keeping this topic within its designated boundaries. That topic is the history of women's education.
Yes.
Okay.
So the genesis of this episode actually comes from my own youngest two daughters, actually all three of them, but the youngest two especially. They have been homeschooled for the last number of years. They're both very artistic, both very domestically minded, and we all love watching Jane Austen films together.
Yep.
And I started to notice a look of jealousy in their eyes at some points as they looked at the lifestyles of these ladies and the educations that they had had to prepare them for these lifestyles. And finally, one of them just sort of asked, "So you mean they got to just learn reading and writing and music and dancing and art and embroidery and etiquette? Fair." Because, of course, these are all things that the girls love. As a child who grew up in a world still very heavily influenced by second wave feminism, I was shocked and appalled by this statement. I was like, you, dear daughters, would willingly give up like 2 centuries of progress in gender equity so that you could swap out calculus for country dancing in your curriculum?
I mean, I would do that too.
No, as soon as I started thinking about it, I was like, what? That's not an irrational desire, actually.
I wanted to finish in school.
And so ever since that conversation, I had been sort of like watching out. I wanted to know more about what women's education actually looked like in previous centuries and whether the sort of modern consensus was accurate. And for background, here are a few quotes from a random scholarly article I pulled up, link in the show notes, called Gender in Cultural History, Gender in Education, about women's education before the 20th century. This one is not a particularly high-level article, but it will give you a taste of what scholarly consensus seems to be at. Just a couple of snippets. Initially, women up to the 16th century were non-existent. Their voice and speech repressed and never heard. Women were treated as wives and mothers in the house without any other role. For many decades, women could not acquire an education, and it was obligatory to stay at home. Skipping forward, consequently, educational opportunities for women were scarce, and access to schools and universities was often restricted or denied. Now, I'm not saying that's wrong. I do think that history shows that women's educational opportunities were very different in previous centuries. And yet I'm not sure it tells the whole story. Okay. And so we're going to look into some of the actual story. And by story, I mean literal stories. A lot of the questions you guys will be answering in this trivia challenge have to do with literary works. Or as I like to call them, primary historical documents.
Oh, wow. <laughs> Oh, okay. Boy.
All right. Because I was like, we'll just go back to the sources here.
Okay.
And I love literature.
Oh, boy.
So I thought about starting this trivia challenge all the way back with Athens and Sparta and Plato and all of that. And then I was like, we're going to start where Lutherans usually start, and that is with Martin Luther and the Reformation.
Ah, there we go.
Okay. Yeah. Because that's really sort of the start of kind of the modern era has its roots in this time period.
Okay.
So question one, true or false? Martin Luther was in favor of educating young women.
True.
I feel like this is true.
I'm thinking of Elizabeth Crusoe.
It's like, how do you define educating?
Oh, is what it is.
But okay, true.
We will come back to that. Great little asterisk there, Erin. Yes, the answer is true. And I have here a quote from, I didn't put down the source, link in the show notes, from Luther, where he says, in order to maintain its temporal estate outwardly, the world must have good and capable men and women. Men able to rule well over land and people, women able to manage the household and train children and servants aright. Now such men must come from our boys and such women from our girls. Therefore, it is a matter of properly educating and training our boys and girls to that end.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
So mm-hmm. yes, Luther is actually one of the pioneers in education for all young people,
mm-hmm.
including women.
Yeah. I feel like Elizabeth Krusiger had a, there was something in her story too about how mm-hmm. Luther encouraged her to dig into theology mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. things mm-hmm. in order to actually like be a hymn writer. But mm-hmm.
yeah, he yeah. definitely saw that roles were different, but that the call for all people to be educated in the word of God and theology mm-hmm. was a holy calling and that men and women both alike should pursue it.
Yeah.
So that brings us right into question two. What did Luther see as the most important subject for young women to study?
Theology.
Yes, sorry, I almost gave that one to you. The gospel. So in his treatise to the Christian nobility in 1520, Luther is admonishing the nobility to set up schools so that everyone can read the gospel. And he says, and would to God that every town had a girls' school as well, where the girls would be taught the gospel for an hour every day, either in German or in Latin.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Yep.
Learn the Bible, y'all.
Learn the Bible, yep. So what subjects did Luther seek to de-emphasize in education? He actually was in favor of enhancing some subjects and de-emphasizing other subjects because Luther had been through a rigorous education system.
That's
himself.
True.
Himself.
For women or in general?
In general.
Oh, okay. Math.
Actually, you're right. That was how he called it out particularly.
Wow. I mean, you can't build bridges without engineers, though. So that would be a bit of a problem. But,
huh. So, okay. I don't. What were the subjects then? I would think they would still do history. So is science a subject that he would de-emphasize?
No. I mean, he would sort of probably include that in some of these other subjects. But more generally, math in particular, but more particularly, job training.
Oh.
Because parents then, as now, saw the point of education as preparing their children to be useful and make money.
Yeah. Okay.
And Luther, well, I've got two quotes here that basically say it all. One of them says, every community, especially a great city, must have in it many kinds of people besides merchants. It must have people who can do more than simply add, subtract, and read German.
That's true.
And then later on, he says, God has given you your children and the means to support them simply so, not simply so that you may do with them as you please or train them just to get ahead in the world.
Mm.
That is from his Sermon on Keeping Children in School, 1530. So he saw education as essential for all children, boys and girls.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, parents, I know that your basic instinct is to simply be preparing your children for their jobs,
mm-hmm.
but you have a higher calling.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of education has to be the gospel, just as mm-hmm. every other aspect of life.
Hmm. Interesting.
So keep that content in mind as we go through this quiz, because Luther's opinions will be challenged in one or two parts.
Okay.
But while we are in that era, the Renaissance and Reformation era, let's ask another question about the women of this day. Question four, true or false? Shakespeare's heroines were illiterate.
And I'm going to go with false.
All right. Sarah says true. Aaron says false. Aaron, I'm going to give this one to you.
Yeah.
And I will provide one example from my favorite Shakespeare play, Much Ado About Nothing. Right at the end, while the families and friends are getting Beatrice and Benedict together against their wills. And Claudio says, and I'll be sworn upon it that he loves her. For here's a paper written in his hand, a halting sonnet of his own pure brain, fashioned to Beatrice. And Hero replies, "And here's another, writ in my cousin's hand, stolen from her pocket, containing her affection unto Benedick."
Aww. Ah, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
So here we have proof positive that Shakespeare's ladies not only were able to read and write, but to write poetry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sort of, yeah, there were a lot of illiterate people in those ages, men and women,
mm-hmm.
but mm-hmm. it was not necessarily the default in all circumstances.
Okay.
All right, let's fast forward and jump across the ocean to America in the colonial times for question 5. Which early American poet showed the world not only that women could and should be educated, but that Black women in particular were far more intelligent than society had previously acknowledged?
I do
My
not know.
Knowledge of poets is very small.
Okay, fine. I'm sure there are listeners out there who are like screaming at their phones right now. I know it. For all of you out there, it's Phyllis Wheatley.
Okay.
Tell us more.
I do love this story. So Phyllis was brought over forcibly from Africa as a young child, and was purchased at a slave auction by the Wheatley family in Massachusetts. This was before Massachusetts outlawed the slave trade. And she was actually, the slave trader offered her at a discount because she seemed sickly and he thought she would not live very long. Like, this is a cruel world.
Mm-hmm. That's terrible.
But Phyllis's life began to change soon after that because the family was kind to her. And they quickly realized that she was intelligent. And then, rather than stifling that, the entire family, including their son Nathaniel and daughter Mary, who apparently had been educated, participated in educating Phyllis, teaching her not only to read and write, but a number of other subjects. So that brings us to question 6. Can you guess any of the subjects in which Phyllis Wheatley was educated and showed precocious promise?
Precocious. Music?
No, that's not on my list.
Intriguing, though. That was a nice idea.
Yeah.
So
most frequently went here.
I don't know. Literature?
Yes. British literature, particularly Milton and Pope.
Okay.
Art?
No.
I'm striking out. Math?
No.
History?
Yes, there we go.
Yes, there we go.
All right, you've each got one. I'll give you the rest of the list.
Okay.
She was immersed in the Bible, astronomy, geography, history, British literature, the Greek and Latin classics of Virgil, Ovid, Terence, and Homer.
Wow.
Okay.
So this was quite the education that young Phyllis received.
Mm-hmm.
And fairly early on in her life, she began writing poetry of a remarkably sophisticated nature.
Mm-hmm.
And had a high regard for the art of learning, so much so that her first known poem was addressed to the students at an American university.
Huh.
Can you guess which university Phyllis Wheatley wrote her first poem to?
Harvard.
Oh, that's a good guess.
Guess the other.
Yale.
We should have.
I'm going to actually go with Harvard.
Yeah.
Because she addressed the poem to the University of Cambridge in New England, but Harvard is in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
So yes, Harvard. Part of this poem, and I got to read it to you because it's beautiful and a reminder to students everywhere. Students, to you 'tis given to scan the heights above, to traverse the ethereal space and mark the systems of revolving worlds. Still more, ye sons of science, ye receive the blissful news of messengers from heaven, how Jesus' blood for your redemption flows. See him with hands outstretched upon the cross. Immense compassion in his bosom glows. He hears revilers, nor resents their scorn. What matchless mercy in the Son of God. Hmm. And the poem goes on from there.
Wow.
So I think Phyllis Wheatley probably shared Luther's views on what the purpose of education is.
Sounds like it. Yeah.
Yeah. And all in a second language.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. second of several, since apparently she also did Latin and Greek.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, let's be honest. Phyllis Wheatley's story would have been very different had she lived in the antebellum South rather than in New England.
Yeah.
So I won't deny that. Her foray into Virgil and Homer would have been against the law in a slave state where politicians very consciously suppressed Black literacy and education to prevent uprisings. So the New England colonies, with their Puritan background, were very interested among colonial states, not only in promoting, but requiring education for all their young people, male and female. They did this not only because, like Luther, they wanted everyone to be able to read the Bible, but also so that they would develop moral character, virtue.
Mm-hmm.
These political efforts began as early as 1642, but picked up steam in 1647 when the Massachusetts Bay Colony passed an act with a rather memorable name directed at a very specific enemy. So which famous enemy was the Massachusetts compulsory education law designed to thwart?
Like a political enemy or person or a concept?
An enemy. I will just leave it at that.
Ignorance.
Not bad. Not bad.
I like
Sarah,
it.
I think you can do better. What enemy was the chief enemy of the Puritans?
The Catholics?
The Catholics.
Oh, not the I mean, that was an enemy, but
the king?
No. Go deeper. More evil.
The devil?
Yes.
The devil. Wow.
So this law is now known by the moniker, the Old Deluder Satan Act.
Wow.
Okay.
And I'll read a few lines from it, and you'll get the flavor for it. It being one chief project of that old deluder Satan to keep men from the knowledge of the scriptures, as in former times, by keeping them in an unknown tongue. Take that, Catholics. So in these latter times, by persuading from the use of tongues, that's so that at least the true sense and meaning of the original might be clouded and corrupted with false glosses of saint-seeming deceivers, and to the end that learning may not be buried in the grave of our forefathers in church and commonwealth, the Lord assisting our endeavors, it is therefore ordered that every township in this jurisdiction, after the Lord hath increased them to 50 households, shall forthwith appoint one within their town to teach all such children as shall resort to him to read, write, and read. So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, indeed.
To thwart the old deluder Satan.
Uh-huh.
Massachusetts required every town of 50 households or more to hire a school teacher for both boys and girls for the sake of teaching basic reading and writing.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a thing. We don't have laws like that quite anymore. I mean, we have laws like that, but not with that language.
Not usually focused on Satan.
No.
Not usually.
Not usually.
Mm-hmm. Not overtly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to pop back across the ocean, get back in your sailing ship, and head back to merry old England for a few questions and see what light the great ladies of British 19th century literature can shed on the question of exactly how educated women in the past were. Starting with the Regency period and one of my favorite novels of all time, Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
Perhaps the movie that started this entire conversation going.
That's appropriate.
In one memorable scene in this book, which many fans can quote by heart, I can see a few faces in the ladies' lounge that are lighting up right now. Elizabeth Bennet, Mr. Darcy, Mr. Bingley, and Miss Bingley are discussing the end result of the ideal female education, the accomplished woman. So here's your question. Can you name any of the skills and abilities that are highlighted in this conversation as belonging to an accomplished woman? That is, one who has been properly educated for life.
Needlework.
Okay. Yes, we'll include that. They mentioned explicitly covering screens and netting purses. I think netting purses would count as needlework.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The piano.
Yeah.
Yes, music is included.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Reading of some sort? Literature?
Yes, that's the last thing on the list. Darcy adds this at the very end. He says, to all this, she must yet add something more substantial in the improvement of her mind by extensive reading.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Art. Watercolors.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Drawing is listed.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Dancing? Dancing.
Yes. Very good. Yes.
There we go.
Very good. All right. We've got a couple that you missed, but you probably weren't going to get them anyway. So this starts by Mr. Bingley praising all the young ladies who are so accomplished because they all paint tables, cover screens, and net purses.
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth and Miss Bingley say, well, no, there's a little bit more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Bingley goes on and says, no one could be considered accomplished who does not greatly surpass knowledge of music, singing, drawing, dancing, and the modern languages to deserve the word, by which they usually meant at least French and Italian.
Yes.
Okay. French, Italian, and German.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So music, singing, drawing, dancing, and at least three languages.
Okay.
Yep.
And then she says, a certain something in her air and manner of walking, the tone of her voice, her address and expressions.
Yes.
So, comportment.
Yes, elegance in general.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then Darcy adds the improvement of her mind by extensive reading.
Uh-huh.
So, how many ladies do you know today who can speak French, Italian, and German, and play music, draw, sing, dance, and read a ton?
As Elizabeth said, I'm marvel that you know even one.
Right, indeed. No, the standard is hard. The standard is hard. Was hard to meet then and hard to meet now. But the fact that they said that they admitted that this was not only desirable but possible.
Right.
Tells us something about the education system for at least, you know, rich women at the time.
Yeah. It's a nice fine arts education.
It is.
I would love that.
I know, right? I look at that list and I'm like, ooh, that sounds fun.
A lot of my childhood. Art, dance, music.
Yes.
Yes.
Language.
Yep.
Yep. So that was the ideal. But what was the reality?
Mm.
And I have another Jane Austen novel that can help shed light on this. Because in Jane Austen's Mansfield Park, we see the upbringing of Fanny Price, the poor cousin who is brought to live with her slightly older, much richer cousins and much sillier cousins, Mariah and Julia Bertram. And early on in the book, we see Mariah and Julia complaining to their aunt about how idiotic Fanny is, that she had not learned all that they had already learned from their governess by the age of 12 and 14. I believe they're 12 and 14 when the book starts. And Fanny is just 10 and she doesn't know any of this. So can you guess any of the things that these girls who are being raised simply to be ornaments have learned by middle school?
French.
I haven't read Mansfield Park.
You should. No. It's so good. It's becoming my favorite.
Okay. Is French on the list?
It actually isn't. I'm sure it was included in their education, but it's not on this particular list.
Okay. Arithmetic. No, that's probably not it.
No.
Math wasn't usually a thing.
Arithmetic was a given because women had to keep their own account books.
Mm-hmm.
Track their expenses. What's that?
Poetry.
No. You're going to really love this list.
Oh, boy.
I mean, not now. Now you hate it because...
Music?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, music. Music is on there.
Okay. Art?
Yeah, that's on there too.
Okay.
Okay, let me give you the rest of the list. You'll love it. Dear Mama, only think... Oh, this is with their mother and their aunt. Dear Mama, only think, my cousin cannot put the map of Europe together. Well, my cousin cannot tell the principal rivers in Russia. Well, she never heard of Asia Minor, and she does not know the difference between watercolors and crayons. How strange. Did you ever hear of anything so stupid? How long ago is it, Aunt, since we used to repeat the chronological order of the kings of England with the dates of their accession and most of the principal events of their reigns? Yes, and of the Roman emperors as low as Severus, besides a great deal of heathen mythology, and all the metals, semi-metals, planets, and distinguished philosophers. Do you know Fanny says she does not want to learn either music or drawing?
Okay.
That's an extensive list.
That is.
I know.
I don't know a lot of this stuff.
I know, me neither. Well, I'm not sure I can name the principal rivers in Russia.
Nope.
Or all the metals and semi-metals.
No. Right, right.
I may have learned them at some point on the periodic table, but nope.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to our original scholarly quote, this idea that women could not acquire an education begins to look like it maybe lacks nuance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's obvious that Mariah and Julia, now granted, again, upper crust society,
right,
mm-hmm.
but did have access to an education that makes a lot of what we have available to us today look pretty paltry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But this idea that women lacked access to education was actually echoed by authors like Charlotte Bronte, who lived just a couple decades after Jane Austen. And her heroine, Jane Eyre, upon graduating from Lowood School, complains that she has only been educated in, quote, a narrow catalog of accomplishments.
Hmm.
So I know I'm asking a lot of curricular questions, but I just find this so interesting. What subjects do you think make up that limited range that Jane Eyre is qualified to teach?
Art.
Okay. Drawing.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
It's just my answer for everything now.
Yeah.
Art and music.
History.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
French.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The classics.
Mm. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm.
So she says she is qualified. This is in her advertisement that gets her job as a governess. She is qualified to teach the usual branches of a good English education together with French, drawing, and music. Now, if you look at if you go back to the chapters about her education at Lowood and see what constitutes a good English education, this would include reading, writing, arithmetic, literature, English history, geography, religion, and sewing.
Yeah.
Even though she considers it a narrow catalog of accomplishments, I wonder if maybe it's still that maybe our catalog of accomplishments these days is maybe even a little more narrow.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
Hmm.
Okay, get back in that sailing ship, although it might be a steamship at this point. We're going back across the ocean to America for question 12.
Okay.
Because in the Victorian age, back in America, the public education project was rapidly picking up steam, driven in large part by reformers like Horace Mann, who was all in favor of women's education. Now, Horace Mann had two main reasons for being in favor of education, near as I can tell. What would you say were his reasons for that?
He had children of his own.
No.
Running successful households.
Nope.
The prevention of crime.
I will actually give that to you.
Ah. Okay.
Under number one, promote equality. The quote I have here from Horace Mann is this: education, then, beyond all other devices of human origin, is the great equalizer of the conditions of men, the balance wheel of the social machinery.
Mm.
He thought if only everybody, including women, were educated according to the scheme he proposed, that it would not only create equality in society, but would also solve so many of the social ills that came about from a lack of equality.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And the second reason was he thought women made natural teachers.
Oh.
Okay.
And that in order to be a teacher, you had to be educated to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and this actually goes back to a Platonic idea as well, understanding that women, you know, being, especially for early education, are very natural candidates for teachers.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, as we see women not only becoming more active in education, but becoming not just the students, but the teachers by and large, this means that things start to happen. So in 1790, U.S. men were about twice as likely as women to be literate.
Wow.
Yes. So what happened? What two things changed by 1900? Two major flip-flops.
Did that number flip? Women twice as likely?
I don't know twice as likely, but literacy rates among women exceeded men by 1900.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
The Industrial Revolution.
That does play a role in all of this, specifically in the shift of education back away from the cultivation of moral virtue, which had happened after Luther's time and the Puritans, and also slightly away from the project of the American Revolution to create good citizens.
Yeah.
But of course, the Industrial Revolution really changed things in a more utilitarian direction.
Yeah.
We need useful people.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Ugh, not just virtuous people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what also changed by 1900, and I was astonished that this date was so early, there were more females than males in American high schools.
Really?
Well, right.
That's sort of what I meant by industrial revolution.
Okay.
People, men were going to work.
Okay, yes. Point to Aaron.
Going to school.
Yeah.
And factories and that sort of thing.
Fast. Men were more likely to leave education for the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
As my grandfather himself did, being done with school and working full-time in a sawmill in the 1920s by the age of 14.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So another movement started happening. Aaron, you look puzzled. We'll pause here.
It's interesting that the flip, I was now contemplating that it had already flipped that early.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by 1900, that was already the disparate, that was just what was
seen. And there were also many more female teachers by that time as well.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that changed also changed around this time, because up until this point, despite Luther saying every town should have a school and the Puritans with their old Deluder Satan Act, formal education had always been voluntary.
Mm.
Even if it was free, it was not compulsory.
Yeah.
But as the progressive movement took hold in America in the early 20th century, the desire to make the world a better place, this is a progressive project, make the world a better place, whether the world wants to be a better place or not, led to the spread of compulsory education laws in the U.S. states. So we're going to play hot and cold here while we're talking about this shift from voluntary to compulsory education.
Okay.
By what year had all 48 U.S. states passed school attendance legislation? Give me a number and I'll tell you if you're hot or cold.
1930.
Cool.
Okay. Okay. I'll go next and that way we'll know which way to go. 1947.
Colder.
Okay.
1925.
Warmer.
Oh.
Okay. 1912.
Warm. About the same amount of warm.
Ah.
1920.
Warmer still.
1918.
Yes.
Hey! Hey!
Arithmetic.
By 1918, all the states currently then in the Union, sorry, Alaska and Hawaii, had passed school attendance legislation. Although until the 1930s, many were unsuccessful in enforcing these compulsory schooling laws. And they applied to both boys and girls. No one got a pass. The 1930s were the time when they sort of finally kind of sorted it out a little bit with the Amish, but that would come back later. The quote I have here says, as the population increased and as the demand for well-trained labor grew, the bureaucratic machinery for enforcement was created.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that sound utopian there?
Yes. Yep.
Yes.
Straight out of 1984.
Yes. As a result, coeducational boys and girls, public schools proliferated but they were not universally loved. We're going to go to another literary work here. Bebe Smith's 1948 novel, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, at which she looked back on her childhood in the, you know, early 1900s. And her heroine, Francie, in this slightly autobiographical novel, says that there is only one adjective to describe the public elementary school that she attended for her first couple of years. Can you guess the adjective, or guess an adjective, and I'll tell you how close you are.
I'm going to go with harrowing.
Oh,
harrowing. I like that. Unless Sarah can come up with a better one, you might be as close as we get. You're in the right zone.
I don't know that I can make a better word than Aaron.
The only word I was thinking of is boring, which is not even close to Aaron.
Oh, okay. Aaron is closer.
Okay.
Because the actual word that Bebe Smith gives here is brutalizing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it is.
Yes. Okay. She says brutalizing was the only adjective for the public schools of that district around 1908 and 09. And the reason for this, she says, and this is probably fairly controversial, her analysis of the situation, but it's literature, so I'll share it with you here. She says teaching requirements were easy. Graduation from high school and 2 years at teachers' training school. Few teachers had true vocation for their work. They taught because no one wanted to marry them. Married women were not allowed to teach in those days.
Yeah.
And so, she says, they spent their fury on other women's children in a twisted, authoritative manner.
Oh, ouch.
Okay.
Oh. Now, right. This is just her one author's take on the situation. But I think the sense that you get that the public schools were really intended, at least at this time, they were intended to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
But that they didn't necessarily always achieve that goal.
Yeah.
Certainly not for the lower income children who were required by law to show up every day for hours a day. And the schools, of course, by this time had completely given up the notion that schooling had anything much to do with religion. There was still some prayer in public schools, but it was meant pretty much for making the kids be good, not for sharing the gospel with them.
Yeah.
And of course, not every school of the time was a brutalizing experience. Francie herself later in the novel changes schools and ends up at a place that is much, much healthier for her. And Lutheran schools.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then and now continue to offer a loving gospel-soaked alternative to some of the worst aspects of this compulsory public education movement. And I know out there we have many godly, loving public school teachers and families. And this is not to denigrate your experience at all. Simply to say that we're also grateful that for the families that need alternatives, that alternatives do exist.
Yeah.
And this brings me to one of my favorite questions on this quiz, which is, which pioneering Lutheran school teacher was the only woman to have founded a school in the Concordia University system?
Rosa Young.
Rosa Young!
Yes!
Yay!
Rosa J. Young, she helped establish Alabama Lutheran Academy and College in Selma, which later became Concordia College, Alabama. She served as a professor there until 1961, and the college that she started remained open until 2018, educating generations of pastors, teachers, and just wonderful Lutheran adults. So, yeah, very grateful for that great moment in the history of women's education by and for women.
We do love Rosa J. Young here.
We do.
So good.
So to bring things home, and I realize I never get this many questions all at once. Question 17 is going to be a lightning round.
Whoa. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
A la Price is Right style. Okay? So you know how the Price is Right works. You have a an item where you have to guess the price, and you have to get as close as possible to the actual price without going over.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm going to give you three events in recent history that have to do with women's education. Mm-hmm. And I want you to see, you get one guess each.
Okay.
Who can get as close as possible to the right date without going over.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Like, how is it, year or like date?
Year.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah, I did not look up specific dates.
Okay.
That's fair.
Okay. Event number one in the history of women's education. The adoption of Title IX, prohibiting sex-based discrimination in any education program or activity that receives federal financial assistance. What year was Title IX adopted? It's been in the news a lot lately with regard to girls' sports.
Yeah, it has. 2001.
All right, Sarah's is 2001.
Honestly, okay, I'm gonna go with the guess that I had. I thought a totally different guess. No, okay, but maybe you're ahead of it, so it'll be okay. I'm gonna guess 1976.
You're both wrong.
Both wrong.
Because you're both over.
Yeah, wow. I know. It's in the 72.
Aaron is much, much closer. It is 1972 when Title IX was adopted by the U.S. federal government.
Yeah, I should have known it wasn't 76 because, yeah, anyway. Shoot. Okay.
I wasn't alive back then. I don't know. It's always existed in my lifetime.
Exactly. And that's sort of the point here.
Something that was after you were born.
Because I only paid attention to it when I was around that time. Yeah. And I was
I listed the date at which she became aware of Title IX.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. This is going to be fun. All right. Number two. Major Supreme Court decision in Wisconsin v. Yoder, which reinforced parents' right to educate their children at home for religious reasons. I said we'd come back to the Amish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to say, is this Amish?
Certainly sounds Amish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 1995.
Okay.
And
Aaron's making right far more educated guesses than I am. I'm just picking dates.
The right to educate at home. So I'm going to go with 1981.
Once again, you're closer, but you're still wrong.
Wow.
This one was also 1972.
Wow.
The next one also 1972.
That's far earlier than obviously.
Exactly. For me, too. But it makes sense because by the time my husband was being homeschooled, beginning in the mid-80s, the legal framework was in place for it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Huh. So, yeah, we had the undoing of some of those compulsory education laws. Compulsory education still exists for young men and young women. Sorry, ladies, who were hoping that
there's
you could get a free pass
to complete that education in a number of different ways.
Right. More options for how to fulfill the compulsory education laws.
Wait, so is homeschooling like not legal before then?
In some states, it was not legal.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
mm-hmm.
I just never knew that. It's always existed in my lifetime.
Which is why the Amish were such pioneers in this fight, because they said our way of life does not allow us to send our children to high school, particularly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
And they were willing to fight for that.
Wow.
And so blazed a trail for a lot of other families looking for educational options and parental rights to be reinforced.
Yeah. Go Amish. That's wow. All right. Yeah. Cool.
Okay. Last one in this lightning round. Not that lightning. But Price is Right. And this one, I'll give you the hint. This one surprised me. Can you name for me the year in which women first outpaced men in college enrollment? We already talked about the year they outpaced men in high school enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we all know that there are more women than men in college these days.
Yeah.
When did that flip take place?
I'm going to go with, I'm going to guess first this time so that Sarah isn't like, well, you're just always guessing different, undercutting me. So I'm going to go with.
Oh, I wasn't even thinking that. You're just thinking far more than I am. I'm just throwing dates out.
I'm going to guess 1992.
Ah, okay. Well, now I don't know what to guess. So I go first.
Is it higher or lower?
The classic Price is Right thing is to go one under.
I know.
Or one over.
It's no fun, though.
But in this case, I would highly recommend against that course of action.
Under,
go big or go home, Sarah.
Yeah, go big. Go big.
2005.
Ooh, okay.
Wrong big.
Wrong big.
1960.
All right, point to Sarah. I'm on the rebound. It was not actually 1960, but that was under without going over.
Uh-huh.
I was shocked by this. I thought it had been in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the same reason Sarah thought Title IX was in the late 90s, because that's when I became aware of it. But according to Forbes, 1979.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
The women of the 70s were a big decade for education
and for women. Yeah. I mean, but we knew that a lot of stuff happened in the 70s
for women stuff.
But that was, according to my source, the year that there were 200,000 more women than men enrolled in college.
Okay.
And that number has grown significantly since then.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Huh.
So I think we've made it through the question portion of this.
That sounds
except
like
I'm going to ask you an essay question for the end.
No.
What surprised you about anything you heard during this quiz?
Other than the homeschooling thing, which I already have described as being surprised.
Yes.
I think maybe to an extent, the idea of, for example, the level of normal basic education, we'll say, for a gently raised young woman, we'll say, in like the 1800s, that I know during that time that was also like, it also still wasn't necessarily an option to go to the so-called university. And I would, I don't know, the idea of the maybe the level of education, therefore it makes me like contemplate what would university education have entailed if there was already that level at the basic? I didn't say that especially eloquently, but
no, that's a really good point.
A short answer on us.
I know. I have to think.
What did university education consist of? And that would be until the middle of the 19th century, where it changed very much, very heavily toward the sciences.
Yeah.
You know, help out the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
Before then, university training was something reserved for elite white men, and it had largely to do with the classics.
Yeah.
Reading Greek in the original, all the philosophers, preparing them for lives of political leadership or ministry in the church.
That
there were very the university was, it wasn't like all the men were going to university and all the women were locked out.
Yeah.
It was a few of the men were going to university and all the women were locked out.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the men were also locked out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, that for me, that was very eye-opening to see what the basic level of education was. And there were a couple of sources that I did not have time to include that I wish I could have. For example, in Louisa May Alcott's novel, Eight Cousins, there's a wonderful scene where Rose, the rich daughter of the family, takes it upon herself to educate her new best friend, the servant girl Phoebe, and finds out that while Phoebe can't read, she also is way better at mental math than Rose will ever be. That she has had a different kind of education.
Yeah. Yeah.
That Rose can barely do anything around the house, and Phoebe is very capable of all kinds of work and has had to work and knows how to work and her mind is very quick and sharp, but that she has just had a different kind of education. And that was an eye-opening thing for me. And this is something, if you are a literary lover like I am, you can pay attention to the answers to questions like this as you go about your reading historical literature. How did people actually live and think about these kinds of questions? And once you set your mind to a question, all of a sudden, bing, mm-hmm. passages will pop up for you. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I mean, there's no, this has painted a bit of a rosy picture. There's no question that women's educational opportunities, as we consider them today, were more limited than men's throughout most of modern history. Yeah. But what I took away from this quiz, and what I kind of hope you do too, is an increased respect for how learned our foremothers actually were. Mm-hmm. To read some of the modern mm-hmm. scholarship on the question, you would come away with the idea that women in times past were completely ignorant, that yeah. they had zero opportunity for education. And I don't right. think that the historical evidence really bears that out.
Yeah.
They studied theology, literature, languages, science, yep. math, art, music, and of course, so many domestic arts that have fallen by the wayside today.
Yeah.
Jane Eyre not only learned to speak French and, you know, teach music and drawing, but she also sewed all her own clothes by hand. I can't do that.
Yeah.
Aaron, I know you can, but you're like really special.
It took a long time to sew by hand. Let me tell
right?
you.
Yeah. I'd love to be able to do that.
And I think also I came away with a deeper respect for the fact that parents in every age are not necessarily indifferent to their daughters' educations.
Mm-hmm.
That mm-hmm. many, many, not all, but many parents in bygone eras care deeply about preparing their daughters for adult life.
Mm-hmm.
The education they offered might have been tailored to what they anticipated that adult life to look mm-hmm. like, but mm-hmm. they were still very invested in bringing them up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They had different objectives and priorities for their education. Luther wanted to educate girls so that they could read the Bible and believe the gospel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Puritans wanted to instill biblical literacy, moral character. The early Americans wanted women who would raise good citizens because we have the right to vote now, not the women, but they can raise the sons that vote. And so they need to raise good citizens.
Oh, man.
The Victorians wanted women who could run a home and serve as a moral compass for society as the men were really struggling through the Industrial Revolution. The progressives wanted women who were prepared to contribute to the economy in some way.
Mm.
And today, I'm not sure what we went necessarily. That might be a subject for another podcast. So be thinking about that. What does an accomplished woman look like today?
Oh,
that might be a fun big question for the future.
Question.
Oh,
whoa.
No promises. I actually want to tackle that, but it is fun to mull over in my brain. If I were sitting in the drawing room with Mr. Darcy and Miss Bingley today, and we were talking about what constitutes an accomplished woman. A well-educated, well-equipped, skillful, intelligent woman in 2026, what would go on your list?
That is a fascinating question.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
I think it's just been interesting to, I don't know, hear all of this. As I think, I don't know, sometimes we do have this like chip on our shoulders of like, oh, women were never educated. But like, that's not true.
Not even true.
I mean, think back to our episode on Fanny Crosby.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
She was blind. And she was more educated than I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah. We read so many stories of the women who were like the first woman to go to a certain university to do a science because the men didn't think she was smart enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
that, I feel like that mindset was very prevalent, but it's a lot of times it's at university level mm-hmm. of women or married women who want to do an educational thing because they're smart and they can, and the men are like, no, you can't, but for not like really good reasons. I just mm-hmm. don't want them to. I don't know. That's the stuff that I read, but it's
that is definitely a prevailing narrative.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe I want to challenge that just a little bit. Yes, women's opportunities were different. That doesn't mean that they were completely ignorant.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. This is a topic that's interesting to me because my mom got her master's in geography in like 1970 something. I should
know the date. That's awesome.
And like I realized when I went to do my master's that like that must have stuck with me as a little kid. Mm-hmm. That like my mom, she's got a book of her dissertation for her master's degree. And I think it's like I remember picking it up and reading it when I was like a really small child. So like I don't know, that stuck with me that like my mom's a smart cookie.
Right.
And it's so cool. And I think that must have inspired me to also like just kind of love education. So shout out to my mama.
Yeah. I mean, Sarah, you are definitely an accomplished woman.
Uh-huh. Thanks.
And becoming more accomplished by the day.
That's right.
The theology. It's a theology. Uh-huh.
That's true.
An accomplishment.
It is. Well, and that's the other thing I want to take away, that I personally will take away from this trivia challenge. And that is the notion of the question that I started the quiz with, a set of questions. What is the purpose of education? And while there are many purposes to education, I think Luther was spot on. Yes, it's good to teach your kids how to add and how to read and prepare them for lives of useful service in the world and hopefully the opportunity to be financially independent at some point. Although the way the economy is going these days, who knows? But deep down, the true purpose of education is to teach them about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Help them read the Bible, help them understand it, and build faith that comes by the word of God. And so as a home educator myself, I like to, it really is liberating to realize, okay, of all the objectives that I have before me, this is the main one, and I really can't lose track of that. So giving thanks for all the faithful mothers and fathers of years gone by who have taught their daughters or hired people to teach their daughters to read and introduce them to the word of God, that we can keep passing that legacy of faith on to the next generation. All right, I think it's time for me to be done talking. But thank you all again for playing. This has been fun.
Yeah.
I always love quiz days.
Uh-huh.
I learn things. It's great.
Yes.
Ladies, if you want to answer that big question that we have broached about what an accomplished woman in this year would be, you can certainly answer that question. It may or may not show up as a future episode. We'll see how daring we get in the future.
This one took guts enough. Come on.
Yeah, that would definitely be creating our own drama if we wanted to answer that question. But anyway, tell us what you think. You can do that in our Facebook group, the Lutheran Ladies Lounge, or on our Instagram page at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. Feel free to comment in both of those places. You can find all of our episodes at KFUO.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm your quiz mistress, Rachel, who is not as accomplished as I would like to be, but I'm working on it.
I would love to speak French. That would be great.
I know, right?
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at KFUO.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at KFUO.org/give.